The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. This is UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for being here, and thank you for joining me. And wow, do we have a day ahead for you. It has been such an absolute pleasure to serve you as your host here on The Intentional Spirit with Unity Online Radio. This is our last week to be there. Unity has made the decision to release the radio show, and I will be moving my radio show to mindbodyspirit.fm, and I will make you aware of that through social media, so please be attentive. More importantly, though, is our guest today. And so I am so thrilled to really honor this incredible author that one of the first times I met him, I said, wow, you're going to create a whole evolution and a whole new window when it comes to death. So welcome to our show today, William Peters. I'm so glad you're here.
Temple, good to be here. A real honor to be on your show. And good to see you're going to be going somewhere else as well. So you can continue
yeah.
to work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The work must be done, you know. So when you have the calling, as you know, It reveals itself in some way and in some situation. You know, I was thinking about you earlier because I was thinking, first and foremost, you have created energy and conversations on one of the most necessary topics on the planet. And I was also thinking that you also picked a topic that at all costs people want to avoid talking about, period, because everybody is pretending, you know, that it's never going to happen to them or anybody that they know. And that's the topic called death. So one of the things I was kind of intuitively guided is I would like you, obviously, we have plenty of time to talk about your new leading edge book, but At Heaven's Door. But I would like to start with just a little chronological line in your life of how William Peters, you know, picked this instead of being a volleyball coach, or, you know, or picked this instead of, you know, because it's a topic. And it's a topic that literally, it's almost like calling for an offering in a spiritual community. People stop breathing. So I really, I wanted to hear a little bit more. I wanted our audience to hear. Obviously, I've chatted with you through these last couple of years. Walk us through, how did this become important to you that you're willing to move your life aside and say, here I am. Here's my banner. I stand for this. Here's my book. And this is very important because I know it is because of my life experiences.
Yeah. Thank you for starting that way because, yeah, when you said, you know, why don't you become a volleyball coach? The thought went through my mind. I think that would have been a lot more enjoyable in some ways. So, because, you know, my experiences, my primary experience, I think the real fork in the road happened when I was 17 years old, you know, living a, you know, suburban, upper middle class life, very athletic, really enjoyed having fun, pretty standard, you know, 17-year-old boy, if you want, young man. But I had a skiing accident, a severe one, in which I fractured my spine, and I was catapulted out of my body and had, you know, a classic near-death experience. You know, sailed away from my body on the ski slopes, had a life review, went through a beautiful rib tunnel, could see the awe-inspiring galaxy, cosmos, you know, eternity, if you will. And then I saw the light. And when I saw the light, I didn't have the response that most NDEers have, my first response was, oh, I'm dying and I don't want to die. That life that I just lived is ended and I don't want that. Mm-hmm. And something about me, which still persists till today, is I'm pretty much an outspoken person for things that are important to me. And so I started negotiating with God. I refer to that light as God. I grew up Catholic. And I really pled with God. I didn't complete what I came to that life to do. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't know why I was saying that. It was just a deep, deep realization. I did not complete what I came into this incarnation to complete. And as I'm saying that, I'm realizing what I didn't share was that in that space where I realized I was dying, I realized I had been in that space hundreds, if not thousands of times previously. And it was very familiar. And that's why I had the realization, damn, I didn't do what I came to this life to do. So as you can tell, I came back and that experience didn't really come across my mind in any conscious way for quite some time, maybe a decade passed before I even realized that I had that experience, a near-death experience. This was in 1979. But it changed me. For one, I was in a great deal of chronic pain. There wasn't much they could do to me in the ways there was no real fix. So I was limited in all my physical activity. I had trouble walking episodically, couldn't sit for long at all. So my life changed completely. My identity as a healthy, active young man changed. Not to say that I didn't continue to push myself. I did travel. I did as much sports as I could, mostly swimming and things like that. But I've always prided myself, not just out of pride, but really valued health and getting out in the world and you know, doing what I could to become basically a conscious person. And so I actually, after that, had a major life change in terms of career and trajectory. I ended up living and working in Central and South America, in Peru, one of the countries I was living in, civil wars were happening. So I was really brought face to face with death and dying, and in a way that was not pretty. And so I'll come back to that a bit later, but that was something that really hit me pretty hard. But I was thankful for the experience and to deal with death and dying, quite frankly, in a shamanic culture. These were indigenous people I was dealing with, and their understanding of life fit into a larger trajectory of a soul's journey, if you will. Also worked in the AIDS epidemic when I returned back to the San Francisco Bay Area. And so I was hired because I spoke Spanish and could work with all the immigrants coming in from Central and South America in the late 80s, early 90s. And then the AIDS epidemic happened. And I found myself working with a lot of primarily gay men dying of AIDS. And I started hearing spiritual experiences at the end of life. And they rang true to me because I had a near-death experience. Sorry, I mean, I'll tell a short story. I mean, you know, I talk about this in my book, but Brad was a client of mine. And he was a type of, you know, what we call psychopomp or death doula. He was helping his brothers, as he called them, die because he was living in a home and encampment, as so many were during this time. And he was kind of this person that would usher his community, create the rituals and help people die. So he came in one morning and said, and he looked disheveled and wiped out, beleaguered. And he said to me, I said to him, Brad, what's up? I mean, you look really out of it. And he proceeded to say, yes, I haven't slept very much. Randy died last night. And I said, oh, Randy. I said, I'm so sorry. And he said, oh, no. He says, don't be sorry. It was the most beautiful death. And I said, well, please explain. And he explained that Randy, upon his physical death, ascended up a cylinder of light, stopped above this community of brothers who were with him, looked down and essentially bowed to each of them, saying, thank you for caring for me. You can see that I'm alive and well, and I love you, and I'm going on. And what Brad recounted to me, and I'll never forget this conversation, is He said he looked so healthy and vibrant and happy, which was such a profound difference from Randy just moments before, who was besieged by the HIV virus in the early 90s that was just causing gruesome deaths. And so when I heard that, I wasn't aware that I'd had a near-death experience that was somewhat similar, but it fit with me. I had an inherent openness, though I didn't doubt. I said, oh, that makes sense. I didn't say that. I said, oh, okay, tell me more. And I got very curious. I would hear many more of these experiences. And then, you know, I also later worked in Zen hospice, primarily as my interest in this field grew. But all the time, not really making a career choice in this until I met Raymond Moody in 2009. And in that moment, he was providing the first research ever on the shared death experience in a Western context. I mean, he popularized the term shared death experience. When I heard that in 2009, I was already a practicing psychotherapist. I was already working with grief and bereavement and spirituality, spiritual experiences in particular. And when I heard Raymond share the story, I was like, I'll share the research. I said, oh my, I know all about this. In that moment, my life changed and I dedicated myself to being a researcher and working with people to develop methods where they could enable this shared death experience. I should say the shared death experience is an experience where somebody dies and a caregiver, loved one, or bystander, sometimes just a healthcare bystander, reports that they shared in the journey with the dying into a benevolent afterlife. At least the initial stages, very familiar or similar to the near-death experience in terms of phenomena. As I shared my experience, my near-death experience, many of the phenomena, like seeing the light, like seeing, I didn't see deceased relatives, but a lot of people do. That's the most dominant feature in the shared death experience, is that the experiencer, the human who's still in the human realm, sees the dying, sees the deceased move through these processes in the initial stages of the afterlife, and often sees elevated beings described as light beings, angels, also deceased relatives, aunts, uncles, grandparents, mothers, fathers. All this happens in this beautiful realm of the initial stages of the afterlife. So that's how I got into it. Thank you for asking. It's quite a story. I would never imagine at 17 years old, at 20 years old, or even in my 30s, that I would be doing this now in my 50s.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, for me, that is part of, you know, being an intentional spirit, is that things happened early on in your life that shapes shifted. So I know that as human beings, we have free will and choice, but yet there's still something to be said with how we are shaped, if we'll allow ourselves to be shaped. And I was thinking of one time I took training at a hospital to be a chaplain. Not a local spiritual community chaplain, but a very intensive training. And when it came time for people to share, you know, how many times have you had someone die? And I was in my 40s then. And I said, you don't have enough time for me to name and tell you all the things. I was fortunate that I had all my great grandparents, my grandparents, my great uncles, my grandaunts, but cousin die and drowning, and my grandfather namesake die, blah, 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 blah. And I went, so death has been all around me. And so though my story is very different than yours, I had to come to a place where I could sit with, what can I do about that? You know, so for me, my passion became about, well, I'm not going to die while I'm living, right? Because I'm going to die, and I can't seem to wrap my head around that. I don't even want to focus on that, but I want to focus on not dying while I'm alive. So my point in all that is that I'm very comfortable in that conversation of, you know, how are you dying now? People look at you like, what? I meant, yeah, how are you? You're in that job you don't want to be. Well, you're dying a little every day, but you are so comfortable with, I'm not implying you take it for granted, but because you welcome this opening in your heart, you have more and more experiences that come to you. And that's why I'm so thrilled that you're sharing this, because it requires people to open. It's like we say about people saying, well, I don't have any miracles in my life. It's like, did you breathe today? Yeah. Are you still breathing? Yes. Well, you had a miracle happen. Did your heart beat? Well, that's two miracles right there. So build on that, you know? So anyway, I'm one of your cheerleaders out there in the field going, yay, go, go. So it's just, it's very exciting what you're doing. And the space of that, I wanted to tell you something because this happened since I've seen you. A teacher of mine from way back years ago, it wound up that over these last, say, 7-8 years, we were in contact again and emailing and things like that. There had been this huge, you know, 25-30 year gap. One day I get a call from her and she said, I really want to talk to you, which our standard way was emailing. And I call her up. She said, my beloved temple, my beloved student, I just wanted to talk to you because I wanted you to know this is the last time you will ever hear my human voice. I'm going into hospice tomorrow. I am dying, and I wanted to hear your voice, and I wanted you to hear mine. I'm like, that's from work that Raymond Moody, that William Peters, that's the kind of work that you are doing in the world that allow that kind of healthy space of that, you know, that just changed my heart, that like, wow, I want to be like her when I grow up. You know, right? Wow.
Yeah. That type of, using comfort is not really the right term, but in a certain way it is. And I'll tell you why I think it is that way. Because what I see so often is that people are facing an end of life situation. A cancer diagnosis is so common, aging, we have so many elders in our world now, and they're, in a certain sense, they're deluding themselves to think that they're not going to be dying anytime soon. And the reality is that the people I'm talking about, most of them are actually going to be dying relatively soon. When I say soon, I'm saying months, within a year, maybe 2 years. But the challenge, or the issue I have with the delusion is that conversation that your teacher had with you, that is the conversations we need to be having across our culture all the time with our elders. Because what she gave you is this gift of saying to you, listen, Temple, I'm telling you that I know I'm dying and I'm not in denial. There's no delusion here. I'm going into hospice. I'm going to be dying. This is the last conversation. And I want to create a space where we can connect about what's true and what's real. And let's not let the distractions of delusion, of thinking this is a conversation we can have later. No, it's not. And I think that directness is such a gift, because we all just do this kind of codependent dance around death. It's like, oh, I don't want to make her anxious. Well, I don't want to make him anxious. Or, the dying says, I want to tell my kids because they're going to get anxious. And the kids don't want to say to the mom, I think you're dying because I want to make her anxious. The whole thing is nothing but a lack of truthfulness. Mm-hmm. And I mean that with directness, but I'm a very, Temple, not you and I talk quite a bit. I mean, I'm a compassionate person, but I think that we do a very, we engage in a very uncompassionate, uncaring act when we don't tell our loved ones what we are feeling inside of ourselves about our own life. And if we're a caregiver, loved one, we don't express our concern for our loved ones, you know. And I have just a situation just last week where a man called me and said, you know, I'm dying and my family doesn't know it, but I know I am. And I don't want to disappoint them. And I said, you know, I think you need to call a family meeting, and I'm happy to facilitate it. You know, where I can say, hey, your father, your spouse has something to say to you. And I really want to create a space here so everybody can take some breaths and realize this conversation we're going to have is going to be one that your father needs to have. But every one of you here, children, spouse, best friend, this is a conversation you will remember forever. This will be this. Yeah. And so, like I said, so there's steps here that can be taken, and your teacher just modeled a beautiful one. I'm just wondering, Temple, what happened after you made contact around that existential reality that this is the last conversation? Because in my experience, that opens a space for a richer, deeper, you know, an opportunity for an amazing conversation. Actually, after you establish that this is our last conversation, your teacher's dying. Now what?
Right. Well, it's such a ripple effect. You know, first and foremost, I was honored that she called me, that I was one of those, however many or whatever, that I was a person she called, and that my last moment, because you know, and I know that that's one of the things that comes up, either an expected death or non-expected death, which really the bigger picture, as you say, I'm compassionate too, but all death is to be expected if you're living, you know? So, but with the expected death, the fact that what people usually say is, and I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. I didn't get a chance to say thank you. Well, first and foremost, we ought to do that every day. I drive some of my close friends crazy because I'm like you. My close friends are few and far between. But I say all the time, I just love you. I appreciate you. And, you know, because I learned that, because I want to make sure those are the last things that exit my lips, because I don't know if I'll see you again ever, because that's real. That's what life looks like. But I was so grateful that I had the chance for that. And then the ripple effect from that was then I went on an inner shamanic journey inside myself about how she had impacted me, how what I had learned from her, and did I really learn? Because if I did, then I would be exemplifying those qualities. And then the ripple effect from that is that's the seed I'm planting of how I want to be. Yeah. I want to be able to, from the dying bed, if I have the good fortune of being aware of it, to pick up the phone and call someone and say, this is the last time you will be hearing my human voice. That was just, it was huge. Exactly what you said. And probably in ways that I don't even know yet.
Yeah.
Because it was so needed. It's so needed in our society, and it's so healthy. Rather than living in the land of denial and pretending if we never talk about it, it's not going to happen. And like you were saying, of the man that went, no, I don't want a disappointment. The disappointment is cheating someone from being able to have the experience with you that really loves you.
Yeah.
You know, I had another teacher that just shut me out, because she was doing a natural choice death with breast cancer, and she didn't want me to see what was happening to her body. So she was angry and shut down. And, you know, so that's another kind of experience, right? So, yeah. And that's, as you know, I'm such an advocate for all that you're about, because it's so, so necessary.
Yeah.
Necessary. And so, and our, obviously our whole second half, we want to hear all about the book and some of the steps, and obviously everyone, you can go to amazon.com and you can purchase the book. It's presented by Simon & Schuster. The book is doing extremely well, but let's make it our mission to make sure it does even better. And for sure. And so when did it come to you? We have a couple of minutes here. When did it come to you or find you that it needed to be in book and audio form, William?
You know, I realized about 12 years ago that we needed a research project to really bring these spiritual end-of-life experiences to the healthcare community, to the medical community primarily, and to mental health providers who deal in grief and bereavement. Because what happens when you bring a spiritual experience into a medical setting is we don't have the language, we don't have the understanding for spiritual experiences in a medical setting. Now, you as a spiritual, you know, person, reverend, what have you, and your particular training experience have a unique openness, even among spiritual leaders, you're very unique in that way. But so you can run into, and I was seeing this, people coming into resistance in medical settings. So I realized the only way I was going to be able to influence them was to do research. And so did a long research project, was published in the American Journal of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, a very prestigious journal. It's been published, our research has been published other places. This then provided the foundation to then go to a major publisher and do a general audience book.
I'm so glad they listened to you, everyone. We're talking to William Peters. You can find him on Facebook at Heaven's Door. You can Google him. Let's go to Amazon and get that book. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome back, everyone. And I'm sure you're thinking exactly what I'm thinking. What an author to end our experience as The Intentional Spirit here on Unity Online Radio. I don't even know how many years I've been on Unity Online Radio. It has been near and dear to my heart. I have by far met some of the most unique people on the planet by hosting this radio show. And none other too than today is no different in that that's actually how I met you, William, is a couple of years ago in discussion about you being on this show and what that would look like and the experience. And so I just want to thank Jeff Comfort and Diane Ray for all the effort and the energy that they have put into the show. And thank Unity Worldwide Headquarters for hosting it for so long. It's been a real special thing, near and dear to my heart. And how appropriate, we're talking about death. And so, William, so you had kind of prepped us before our break time about, you know, you had had data and all these things. And that, you know, that's, I feel, what made Edgar Cayce, you know, so significant is because he did case studies and he had things documented and it wasn't just ethereal or, you know, out there kumbaya, it was factual information. And your book has only been out a very short window of time. I'm so glad it's doing well. But take it from here and walk us through some of the things that you feel are significant before we can get that book into people's hands.
Thank you. Yeah, so the, you know, I'll say the approach to, you know, writing the book, what I was thinking as I was crafting it, was that I wanted to have the stories of ordinary people lead the way in sharing this really, it's a pattern. It's this, the shared death experience is this pattern that happens for many people at the end of life. We don't know how many people because we don't We don't know how many people are actually having shared death experiences because they're still not out in our culture in any significant way where people feel, quite frankly, safe to talk about them. And the, most of the people that I have interviewed, either clinically or then later in the research, they would often say, you're either the first, second, or third person I've shared this story with. Rarely did anyone share it with more than a handful of people. And so we know that the shared death experience, these experiences are happening. And we suspect that they're happening a lot more than people know because very few people are talking about it. So when I wrote the book, I started by sharing really common experiences that people have around end of life and saying how these experiences occur. If you remember, you know, Temple, the first story is about this woman, Gail, who talks about being at the bedside in a hospital while her father's just in the hospital. She doesn't think he's dying. She thinks he's just in the hospital. And then all of a sudden he has a seizure. They usher her down to the waiting room. And while she's in the waiting room, something happens to her. She gets drawn into this beautiful scene where she's walking with her father down a pathway, a country path that's gorgeous. She's comfortable. She feels his presence with her. Then she starts hearing voices coming from a kind of an estate, a very nice residence that has a wall or a gate in front of it. And she starts hearing people referring to her father, saying, Walter's coming. Walter's coming. We have to get ready for Walter. Let's prepare Walter. And she gets the sense that this group of people whose voices she recognizes as deceased relatives from Walter's early years, if you will. And Walter then proceeds to enter into the party and everyone's excited, but Gail needs to stay outside the gate. She realizes she's not welcome in that party. That's for people who have passed on, if you will. And so she talks about how heartwarming it was for her to be with her father, to see him going to be welcomed by deceased relatives on the other side, to know that her father is alive and well in a benevolent afterlife. And she had a sense that she would see him again because all her deceased relatives were alive and well and welcoming him home in a certain way. So these are the experiences, many, that's just one of 28 that I share. And I talk about the various patterns that constitute the SDE. At this point, what I have identified as a clinical researcher and now, you know, formal researcher in the academic side of things is that this pattern is very easily kind of identified. And it's replicated over and over again in the book in very beautiful but distinct representations. Not everybody has the same experiences at all. There is no shared death experience. It's the same. They're all highly personal. What we find is that journey is the dominant motif from this life to the next. We find that relationships are central between the people having the SDE, because sometimes there's more than one person having the SDE, surviving loved ones. And we also find that that the SDE, as I've said earlier, really replicates so much of the phenomena we see in the near-death experience. And so that tells us we're in a common landscape. We're in a landscape that lives right beyond a human life and is the initial stages of an afterlife, and that it's imbued with love and the highest virtues and affective sublime experiences. So for me, as we've talked about, I want people to be at peace with death. I want people to know that the most cutting edge research tells us that death is not to be feared. In fact, it's a far more desirable existence than the one we're having right now. The human realm has a great deal of suffering for those of us who I think really take this, really are reflective and honest about what we experience here. It doesn't mean it doesn't have joy. It does. As the Buddhists say, 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows. We don't have problems with the joys. We have challenges with the sorrows. And so the near-death experience suggests that, and the shared death experiences and other spiritual experiences at the end of life, that what awaits us, at least initially, is a very beautiful homecoming filled with gratitude, appreciation, and just sublime feelings that are not able to be experienced here in the human realm. So, I mean, I encourage people to do their own exploration, because once you learn about the shared death experience, what I have found in my community is people naturally transform into ambassadors for talking about this experience, because it really holds out a different way of looking at end of life that's far more not just positive, it's realistic, it invites deeper connection, and it allows us to connect more deeply with everyone in our life as we approach the only experience that we know we're going to have, which is death.
And, you know, one of the things you were saying is that because as a culture, we have such a disconnect with, you know, if we understood that most of our sorrows create the space for us to have more joy.
Yeah. Right?
It's like somebody asked me one time in an interview, how is it that you're so joyful? And I said, because I've understood that joy is not the absence of pain or sorrow. It's the inclusion of. Mm. And the more you can work with that concept, that those deep wounds and things that happen make you more, not less. But of course, that's a whole other thing with our culture, because it doesn't sell pharmaceuticals and make you codependent to the universe. But all that said, you know, one of the things you were saying is the other thing is that, yes, there's sadness about death, but people angry that their card is being pulled and they're not ready. And that was a terrible experience with my shamanic teacher because she was so angry and it shut people out. I don't want to judge her. I'm just simply stating facts that made it, you know, very difficult. But I think one of the things in that we're inviting people is to share the experiences with you, you know, to write in, to leave comments on your website and things of that nature, and to share them with one another or to talk about them. Like, I had a dream one time of this woman that had been a member in my community, but I really didn't know her. But in the dream, I lived somewhere else then at the time. And in the dream, I saw her just scooting down the road in her little red doodle bug. There she was, and we're, you know, waving at each other. And I responded to that. I didn't say, well, that was just a dream, or why did I think of Shannon? I picked up the phone and I called somebody that lived locally. And I said, I had this dream about Shannon. Well, she died yesterday. So, you know, it's the following it through to learn more and not making assumptions about that, right?
Yeah, and I love that you shared that experience with Shannon, because what we find is that, those experiences happen much more commonly than we know. You have the confidence and wherewithal and wisdom to know that if you have an intuitive hit like that, that you will reach out and follow up. Most people don't. But when you do, it strengthens that intuitive spiritual muscle to both connect and respond to Shannon as you did, and to others who are transitioning. And then you have this very special opportunity. Maybe Shannon wasn't, you know, you weren't close enough to Shannon to have that. But what I find and our research supports is that people will have an ongoing relationship with their departed loved one. And we call that continuing bonds.
Oh, I definitely have that. I have that in my life for sure.
Yeah.
A number of people communicate with me and it's starting to get crowded, like a group, but that's okay. But yes. And those are the things for us to talk about as well, you know? Right. So where do people send their information that your staff can access it? William, obviously,
yeah.
There's a team of people that keep up with this. Where do you want that information sent?
So you can do one of two things. You can go to our website, sharedcrossing.com, and just go to the contact page. They've changed the menu headings at the top, but you'll see where to go. And then you go there, and then you'll be a place, share your story. And then you can just, we have a form that you can send it, just fill out. It's a fill-in form. And then one of our researchers will get back to you of confirming that we received it. And there's another way, is you can just write your story to info@sharedcrossing.com. And then one of our researchers will get your story and respond back to you. But I also want to encourage your listeners to go to sharedcrossing.com and go to our story library. There we have video accounts from our research that have been curated, 3 to 5 minutes, and they'll tell these profound end-of-life stories of communication and connection with their loved ones as they're transitioning. They're extremely heartwarming. And really, as the feedback we get from the story library is things like, I had no idea. You know, thank you for sharing these stories, because now I've really heard people talk about them. Now, that's an easy way to get direct access right now. And obviously, the book is much more developed in terms of how I talk about the people themselves, their relationships, their religious views, spiritual views, and how this experience transformed them. And I should say that one of the reasons that I am most interested and committed to getting word out about the shared death experience is, yes, because it really transforms our relationship to death and dying, which we need, all of us, most of us in our culture. But the benefits when you have a shared death experience, the after effects are profound. I think it's up to 90% of our research participants report knowing, not believing, knowing that their departed loved one is alive and well in a benevolent afterlife. They feel a great deal of peace, knowing that their loved one is not just okay, they are really happy and safe and cared for, but much similar to the story that I share with Gail early, knowing that her father, Walter, was with loved ones and was going to be well cared for and was happy. And she could just breathe out a sigh of relief saying, wow, family members on the other side now have my father. Everything's cool. And so the other piece is that people's anxiety around death and dying diminishes immensely. So most people that have a shared death experience will say, I no longer fear death. Not only that, I'm excited about death. I want to prepare for death. I want to, you know, talk to all my loved ones about getting ready for death whenever that may come. No one's really trying to leave their earthly existence any earlier than their appointed time, if you will. But they, and that's because another after effect is that when you have a shared death experience, you come back from that experience with a sense that of knowing your life has a particular type of meaning and purpose that you then commit yourself to getting into, which is what the purpose of your show is, this intentional living, intentional life. And they get that from these experiences. And then people's grief is radically different. You always miss your loved one. You're always going to have a heartbreak, as you said. Sorrow is a natural part of life, and grief is the price we pay for loving deeply. But the shared death experience imbues this greater wisdom of realizing that death is a natural part of living and dying and the human experience. And so the human experience is then placed in the larger context of a continuity of our soul spirit through many dimensions. And this is just one that occurs naturally with human death. So all this to say that the benefits for learning about the SDE and learning about how you can have these is really important. And I should say, you know, we have resources on the website for sure. And I teach courses all the time. I'm teaching a course right now with Dr. Raymond Moody. I mentioned him earlier. He was the founder of the SDE in the United States. We're teaching an online course now. It's wrapping up. But there's other opportunities. And I'm going to start a course in another couple of weeks that really talks about not just the beautiful patterns, but the benefits and how you can have these with your friends and loved ones. And that is a real gift when you, you know, can say to someone who's dying, hey, I think there's a way we can stay connected across the veil. And they'll look at you like, what? And I'll say, no, there are these experiences that we can have that will, you know, kind of glue us in a certain way, bond us in a meaningful way. And then, you know, all of the programs we do at the Shared Crossing Project, similar to the work that you do, Temple, community is the heart of it. We really bring people together to have meaningful conversations and dialogues about what matters most to them. Because when you talk about death, you boil it down to what matters most. And so that's a bit about the work, the book, and what I think, you know, how we as an organization, the Shared Crossing Project, can support viewers, because we're in the same work that you are. It's mission driven to help people, you know, make sense of and derive comfort and peace around this really challenging act of dying.
Absolutely. And there's 7.5 billion people living. And that means already what we know is 7.5 billion people are dying. And my passion is to teach people, don't die while you're living. And why are you, energetically speaking? And yours is that death opens, it is at heaven's door. It's a door. And it's not a loss. It's not a disappointment, you know. And I think that's something too, that the beauty of new thought is that dying isn't that you failed, you know, or you did what was you were set out to do since day one. It's not a disappointment or a failure, or are you, you know, or this is the one time you didn't want to make the cut. Right. You know, I just find it to always be great medicine for my soul every time there's a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, like you were talking about, and they continue to communicate with you. As I told you, one of my deep, deep, deep special friends has been communicating with me from the other side since 1989. And yet that is about having a door. If you don't have a door and you don't open your heart and allow, it's like miracles. You know, they don't come. You know, these kind of things come with the openness of allowing that and believing that they're so.
Yeah. And you know, you're bringing up something else really important, and that is, you know, so yes, my book is on the shared death experience, but my larger research mission is a series of end of life experiences that I actually created the spectrum of end of life experiences. And that's because as I was doing my research, I found people naturally would come to my consultation office and say, you know, I don't think I had the shared death experience, but before my mother was dying, I saw her talking to my deceased father, and they were having this conversation about things that I remembered that were important to them. And I don't think she was making this up. I think he was there. In fact, I kind of felt his presence there. So we call these pre-death visions and visitations. They're different from dreams because they're so real. They're actual visions and visitations of other beings. And sometimes the caregiver loved ones can have these, but most of the time we observe our loved ones having them. So we look at that. We look at those experiences too. We also look at pre-death premonitions. So many people have premonitions about when they themselves or their loved ones are going to be dying. And we're very interested in those because I'm finding a correlation about when those come up and why they come up for another conversation, Temple. But we're very interested in those. And then also on the flip side of death, this beautiful communication that you've had since 1989 with one of your teachers or friends is just beautiful. That is very common. 56% of adult North Americans report having some type of communication with a significant departed loved one. That's stunning. That's stunning because if you walked into most of our medical offices and reported that, they would say something pejoratively or dismissive, or not just take it up as it should be taken up. Something that affects, well, you're talking to ghosts or spirits, or that's not really right or good or whatever. What I'm saying to you is the research suggests, and my research continues to study and validate these communications that happen. And they can happen through seeing departed loved ones, through hearing departed loved ones, through smelling departed loved ones. I had a woman tell me just yesterday that her dog died and she was smelling him, her dog. And people are like, oh, so that answers another question. These happen with animals? Absolutely. And we love animal cases too. So this is a long-winded way of saying to your listeners, if you have a case like this, we want it. We take, you know, animals and pre and post death experiences, synchronicities as well. We love synchronicities because people talk about birds appearing and, you know, different behavior in nature. I mean, it all speaks to how connected we are. And this is what I'm really, at the end of the day, I just talked to a colleague of mine and we were talking and she's in death and dying as well. And we said, isn't all the teaching really an end of life and these spiritual experiences that we're kind of all one? That like this notion that we're individual and that we kind of, we're kind of like cut off from one another and we can't connect. It's like, that's the biggest myth of all, is that even in death, this thing that's supposed to terminate a relationship, we're still connected, you know? And so it's all about this connection and love and light. And yes. Wonderful. Yeah,
and other also, you know, be comfortable being weird, because that's one of the greatest compliments you can receive. But the other aspect of it is, in my understanding, you know, this, you're the expert in this field. But I was thinking about, I had a great aunt, a number of them, which previously I stated, but one particular that I just adored her. And my mom called and she said, you know, Aunt Claudia is in the last hours of her life. And I went, oh, geez, I wish I could get there, but I can't. And I went out shopping to a antique store, looking around. And there was a woman, and the color of her hair was exactly similar to my great aunt. And the woman walked up to me and she said something. And all of a sudden, it was like her face and everything changed. And it was my great aunt speaking through this person. And then in a minute, it went away. But I'm like, whoa, that just happened.
Yeah.
She spoke through that person's body and said something about my beauty or, you know, whatever. I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, doing that. But it was so meaningful. So there's so many expansive ways. And please go to sharedcrossing.com. Please get to know the work of William Peters. Please spread the work with your family and friends, because it's time for us as a culture to be more healthy. William, you are always a pleasure. I love sitting in this space with you. As we've proven, we talk for hours, but you are such a gift. And I look forward to seeing where all this goes. And I'm grateful to be a part of it. Thank you for being on our show today.
Temple, thanks for having me. I'm glad, honored that I'm the last guest on your show here. Okay. But like we know, everything continues and goes on. So we'll wait for the next chapter.
That's right. The next chapter, the next show. And thank you.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Hi, I'm Jane Asher, and I believe, and from what I've been shown, that when our loved ones die, they don't really leave. They just slip into the next room. On my podcast, I explore the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows when we do die. I speak with authors, friends, transition specialists, and other experts about every facet of death, dying, grief, hospice care, cultural traditions, and also our beliefs about that final journey and what we may end up facing. Please join me on The Next Room on the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network or wherever you get your podcasts.